welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment in the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. And you already know CRP is the CEO of education podcasts, because I mean, how many education podcasts do you actually know about or actually listen to? I'll wait. But not too long. My name is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Had, Mr. Broussard, if you're feeling... I'm feeling a little anxious in a good way, though. The reason why, Lance, is by the time that this episode drops, my birthday would have passed. And, you know, yes, I'm excited to celebrate another year, but I think I'm even more excited to be celebrating with friends. And I think that this year is going to be different because I'm doing, like, so Bridget, of course, is hosting a happy hour on Friday. And then Saturday, there's, like, this party
Maybe
that we're going to go
to. Maybe you should give
the details. Yeah. So Bridget's hosting the Teacher's Lounge Part 2. Because we already have part one and it was amazing. So part two is going to be even more amazing. I just found out that they asked us if we would like to be upstairs. I've never seen the upstairs of Alice on U Street. Okay. Alice on U Street. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where I thought y'all was at, upstairs.
No, we were downstairs that time. It's the same venue, but we're going to be upstairs. So I'm excited about that. I've never seen it. And crazy enough, yeah, I was there, did not even go upstairs. I don't know. It was just a lot of like moving parts and all that good stuff. But all that to say, I'm excited for that. And then on Saturday, we're going to a day party. But Sunday, what I'm more so really excited about is we're doing a workout together. And who I'm saying we a lot because my college friends will be in town. And so shout out to them. They're going to be celebrating and bringing in my birthday with me. And I'm just excited that it's going to be like a full circle moment with the fact that we're rounding it out my last year of my 20s by doing a workout, because that's the vibe nowadays. So that's really what I've been into. So yeah.
That's where you be at, because I be getting the notifications on my watch that you be
working period. Out. And I be replying to your notifications and you
all
love
the
it.
Time. That's so annoying. You know, and sometimes I'll be like, should I turn this walk on? Everybody gonna see that I was walking.
I love it.
My update. So by the time this episode drops, it'll be a week after Mother's Day. And my mom is in Barcelona still. I think I told you that on the last episode. So we kind of did a Mother's Day. So in Spain, Mother's Day is the first Sunday of May. And so what we decided to do, because I was going to be there the first Sunday, we went to London. Yes, we went to London for the weekend.
I love that you're a planner.
Yes. We didn't plan it.
No, but I love that you're a planner in the sense that you knew that Mother's Day was the first weekend before you even went.
Okay, because I was like, I did not plan that, baby.
No, I knew that.
She's obsessed with the royal court, although we don't fuck with King Charles, goddamn. We don't fuck with the court. But she has been following the royal court and feels connected to it. Also, my grandma who passed was also obsessed with the royal court. You know, they grew up loving Princess Diana. So we ended up going to Princess Diana's palace and we had high tea together. So it was really nice. It was very different than like any other Mother's Day because it'd be hard to get certain mom's things. Like my mom is not she likes flowers, right? But like, it's only so many body products and candles. Like she's going to get them. She's not really going to use the things, right? And then like I give you a massage, but like you already have a membership in Massage Envy that you don't use. So it's like all the stereotypical things. So I always lean towards like an experience and I'm good at planning experiences. And then I'll make like a graphic because she likes that. So this one was just super special because I'm like, this is a place you've never been to during a time that you always wanted to come. And we're here together celebrating. So this actual Mother's Day here, I did call her and I texted every mom in my phone.
Shout out to you. That is amazing. I have not done that in years. And I need to do that because there's just something. Mothers deserve it. But it's just also like, that feeling of receiving a text from someone else's child and feeling as if I'm being like just affirmed and loved on is just amazing. So shout out to you. I had to say that because my mom was like, she was like, she was in tears. So as we were when we, she told me.
And I was crying.
We were crying. We had a moment. It was a good moment. So yeah.
God just means a lot to me. And I don't know where I would be.
Okay, please, 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 please.
Do it right now. Okay, anyways, let me just stop.
Yes.
We are going to jump into the episode. And I do think that you will find this one interesting. But honestly, I think all of them are quite interesting because how many times do you get to talk about these taboo topics in school? And you know they exist in schools, but we don't get to talk about them. So we're actually going to jump in and listen to the guests. We are now transitioning into the heart of the episode, which is the concept development. I read that in a book today about being the heart instead of the meat of the episode. So I want to try something new.
Love it.
So we've been talking about taboo topics, as you know, if you've been listening, and we have already had an episode that focused on religion and Christianity specifically and its influences on the education system. And so now we have a new special guest that is going to talk about it through a different lens. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Right. First of all, Jahad, Lindsay, thank you for having me. I deeply appreciate it. Nasser Muhammad, I have been in education for, this is going to be my 13th year. And of course, you all invited me on because I do identify as Black and Muslim, and I am in education. So I deeply appreciate you all inviting me on to share my different perspectives on education and how I feel and how I see things and the, just the different experiences that I have. And, you know, I know that it's going to be a great episode. I know it's going to be a great show. And hopefully that, you know, the listeners can really gain some knowledge, wisdom, and understanding from Muslim students' perspectives, but also perspectives from teachers or staff members or faculty members who identify as Muslim in a school building.
What's your fun fact?
I would say, if I had to say a fun fact, my fun fact would be that I played sports from elementary all the way through college. And being a collegiate athlete and just being into sports and being a competitor, I'm always interested in sports documentaries. And in the beginning, when ESPN first came out with 30 for 30, I was like, yo, I got to get the 30 for 30 documentaries. And so I was watching the Allen Iverson, the Reggie Miller, all the documentaries that came out on 30 for 30. And so that's me. I'm a sports buff, especially the documentaries. And so I would say that's a fun fact about me. So while my passion is education, I'm definitely also into sports. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, I mean, education can be your passion, but you got to have something outside of education because, you know, we can do education all day, but you got to have something outside of it because, you know, there has to be another outlet. So whether you're working out, whether you in the sports documentaries, whether you're going skiing, whatever it is, you got to have something outside of your regular 9-to-5 or your passion. So that's me, sports documentaries.
If that's a word, we might need to timestamp that one because educators absolutely need to have some type of outlet. So I hope y'all heard that one.
I'm seeing a lot of educators actually get into event planning too. So
really?
Sounds familiar, Lynn.
It sounds so familiar.
And I wonder why, whether there's any connection.
Absolutely.
Honestly, the nitty gritty and the pinpoint and the minute by minute plans that we have to create to be an educator is just a transferable skill to event planning.
Yep,
absolutely.
It's just seamless.
I think I also read something somewhere. I didn't mean to cut you off. I read something somewhere that said educators make as many split second decisions throughout the day as doctors do. Because I mean, you already know we got a lot of things coming at us at once, and we got to make split second decisions. And these decisions got to be sound, they got to be thoughtful, they got to be impactful. And, you know, we just got to live with those decisions sometimes. So,
And they have to be also grounded too. Like they have to be grounded. We have to have a lot of logic and reasoning behind it. It's not just like we just pulling it out of thin air.
They got to be equitable. They got to they got to be everything. So absolutely, give them split second decisions. You got to be a true thinker to be educated.
You do, and then you got to be ready to suffer the consequences because somebody not gonna like it.
Somebody's gonna be unhappy.
How unfortunate. So I'd like to start our conversation off by hearing about your perspective as a Muslim student going through school, like what that looked like, if you felt like it was seamless every day to go to school or you felt like there were some areas for growth. Take it away.
Say for me, in elementary, I went to a Muslim elementary school. So to me, that's like almost like going to an HBCU. Everybody around you is black. Everybody believes what you believe. Everybody supports what you support. Everybody is down for what you're down for. And that's how it was for me in elementary school. So I didn't really have any scenarios or situations where it's like, you know, we're going through the cafeteria line and I'm looking at the food. It's like, whoa, I don't eat that. Because when I was in elementary school, everything that was being served, I ate. So I didn't have to worry about missing lunch. I didn't have to worry about pepperoni on a pizza. I didn't have to worry about, okay, is this chicken or beef? I knew that everything that was being served was something that I could eat and something that either my mom cooked or somebody in my family has made before. And so that was my experience at elementary school. When I got to middle school, I felt like, you know, I already had a foundation of my lifestyle, my religion, and what I believed in. And so when I went to middle school, I was able to say, okay, these are the things that I can eat. These are the things that I don't eat. And so I was able to connect with other students who also identified as being Muslim as well. And so that was my first experience of being in a school where there were different religions, different ways of life, and different belief systems. And it's also the first time I was not in the majority belief system or the majority of people who didn't believe what I believe. And so at that time, I was considered to be a minority. When I went to high school, again, still a minority, but at this time, I feel that the school made way and made sure that anybody who was Muslim was seen at the table. So when Ramadan came up, they said, okay, I know we have Muslim students in our school and students who are fasting. Let's make sure when the sun goes down, we have food for them. So if they're staying at the school participating in after school activities, if they're on sports teams, if they're just staying at the school to do homework, they can come see me at the Muslim Student Association office and pick up some supper. And that was very impactful for me because that was probably one of the first times that a school made sure that the Muslim students were seen, made sure that the Muslim students had a place to pray, made sure the Muslim students had an opportunity to just be themselves without any backlash.
Why do you think why was your high school so inclusive for Muslim students? Was there like a larger population or do you think there was like someone in leadership who was Muslim and then decided to do the initiating of these groups, of this group?
Well, I think that you hit on the head, there was somebody in leadership who said, hey, we have number of Muslim students in our school, and our school at this time was K through 12. And so you have Muslim families who are speaking up saying, hey, my child, whether they're in middle school or high school, they're going to be fasting. Are there any provisions that are being put in place so that they can be successful in the school? You know, where they're going throughout the day, they're fasting for 8 hours, 10 hours a day. Can you all put something aside? Or, I mean, even with, like I said, someone in leadership, saying, hey, we have these Muslim students in. I'm going to make sure that when lunch is happening, we grab something for them. So when the sun does set, they can come to my office and pick up something. Or I'm going to take it to their basketball practice or wrestling practice or after school or the after school tutoring center. And so I think that's what that was the reason for the school being so inclusive and making sure that our voice was heard and our voice was at the table. And again, this wasn't yesterday. I mean, obviously I know I look young, but this wasn't yesterday when, you know, Like today, it's like today is kind of cool to me. It's like cool to like, oh man, we got to make sure everybody's voice is heard. Who's not being heard? Whose voice is not at the table? It's cool to do that now. It's cool to be inclusive and equitable. But I'm talking about back in the early 2000s when it wasn't cool, when it wasn't trendy to you know, make sure that everybody had something to eat or make sure everybody's voice was heard and make sure everybody had the things that they needed to be successful. And so that was probably one of the biggest impacts on me in school in regards to being a Muslim student.
Yeah, and I want to get to that inclusion being trending, but I do want to take a step back and ask you the question of like, what for our advocates, like what is Ramadan and like what happens during it? And I think that you did a good job of like explaining some of the prayers and things and the food, but like if you could just break it down for our advocates so that they know what it is.
Absolutely. So every year during the holy month of Ramadan, Muslims around the world fast from sun up to sundown, and they abstain from eating food and drinking. And most times when I tell people this, they say, all right, so you can't eat food. You know, you can't drink juice. You can't drink tea and coffee. But what about water? I'm like, nah, not even water. And they are flabbergasted by the fact that I tell them that you cannot drink water as a Muslim during the holy month of Ramadan. And their response is always, what? No, I got to drink water. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, it's all mental. And people around the world, like millions and millions and millions of people, are abstaining from eating and drinking throughout the day while the sun is up. And so this helps us to build solidarity with those who don't have as much food as we do. It also helps us to grow spiritually. It also helps us to grow mentally. And for me, as I fast throughout the holy month of Ramadan, I start to see how often people want to eat. And it's nothing wrong with it, but it just grows the soul. It's like, okay, some people or some companies or organizations, they're essential. They thrive around, okay, we're about to have a meeting. All right, let's eat. We just came into work. All right, let's eat. Okay, we just finished eating breakfast. All right, what's for lunch? And it's nothing wrong with it. But at the end of the day, it's like, okay, can we go throughout the day with just working and not having to consume food? And I think that Muslims throughout the world show that it's a possibility each and every year when we fast throughout the holy month of Ramadan. I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a powerful answer. I like that.
Lindsay, I think that you've done at least 10 days of fasting before.
I have.
In solidarity. Please tell me about your experience. What was it like?
It's interesting you bring up the part about like things you notice, because like you're obviously going through your own like inner spiritual journey as you're fasting and going through the regular day and ensuring that you're being more generous to people and giving to people and ensuring that you're praying throughout the day as well. But just to be like, I don't want to say I felt like othered, but I felt like in the haze of being hungry, right? And in the haze of also like having to still deal with 30 kids during this time, it was really interesting to see how many times I was offered food and like how many times, honestly, I could say no without having to explain while I was saying no. Because I didn't like walk in there and be like, hey, I'm with the Muslims today. We outside, you know? I'm just like, okay, I'm going to do this. But what was cool is that I did have somebody else that was in the building that was a teacher that's Muslim. And so she was fasting. And so that was also an interesting experience to see somebody else that does this every year, is committed to it every year, to see what their experience is. And then I think I became just more aware during Ramadan of trying to speak up for people that were fasting so that they didn't have to say something like, no, you don't need to offer her that cup of juice or that water, or we don't need this stuff sitting out right here, because that is one way we can be supportive if we don't have time to actually sit down and understand why this is important to this group of people that we work with.
Absolutely. And I think you just reminded me that another component of Ramadan is striving to refrain from quarreling or arguments or fussing and fighting with each other. Also striving to increase your patience. Just because, I mean, Lindsay, you said it. I mean, you're fasting and you're having to have conversations with students, parents, faculty. It's like, man, I haven't eaten all day. I haven't drank anything. Please take a step back. I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just trying to chill. And you really have to make a concerted effort to increase your patience, because if not, you might get into a fight. Not a physical one, but a verbal one, a verbal sparring match, because your temper can go very high. Because, I mean, you go, it's almost like you rip the Band-Aid off and you go cold turkey. You go from eating whatever you want, drinking whenever you want, to just, all right, I'm not eating anymore when the sun is up, and just rocking out like that. And it's for some people who do it for the first time, it can be very challenging. And so even I try to get, you know, I try to get 10 friends to do 10 days of fasting with me. And for some, it's very challenging because they are used to just eating any and every time and not having that discipline to say, all right, I'm not eating. I'm going to be the one that's in control of my body. My body's not going to tell me when it's time to eat. I am going to be the one who says, all right, sun is up, I'm not eating. Sun's down, all right, it's time to eat. And it's really all mental. And so I think once you master that mental piece and master your lower desires for food, then you can be successful.
Mm-hmm. Really analyze your relationship with these things.
What?
And that does need to happen, because I do think that in America specifically, there's a very weird attachment to food. And it's sad, because I was talking to Lindsay about this the other day, just in like when you go to visit other countries and you go to their Walmarts, you go to their local grocery stores, and you see the food that they have, or the things that we have in America that they do not have. And the reasoning behind that, after you do more research, is it's just very unfortunate for us to have a Food and Drug Administration that is supposed to be like okaying certain things that are put onto shelves. But when you look into the research and you start understanding like the red dye 40s and like all this from the food coloring,
corn syrup.
Yes, like all these like preservatives that are even sprayed on vegetables. And it's just, it's a lot. That's an episode in itself.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think, Lindsay, I think you posted something on Instagram just talking about the different foods that are not acceptable in other countries. And you look at the list, it's like, man, this is like everyday stuff that people eat. It's like, wait a minute, Twinkies and cereal and all types of stuff, it just banned from other countries because of whatever the ingredients are. And we just continue to eat it. And so I think that was another thing that helped, that was helpful for me when I was in elementary. We had like a class, like a food and nutrition class, just talking about and looking into the different foods. Because even, for example, even, you know, while I said elementary was like a safe haven, everybody ate what I ate, when I went over to my grandmother's house, my grandmother wasn't Muslim. And so sometimes she would say, go ahead, eat this ham hock. Eat these neck bones. I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Whoa.
And I'm like, I'm with my brothers and sisters. Like, I mean, we in solidarity, like, we don't eat that. It's like, what? And it's your grandmother. You want to be respectful.
It's your black grandma.
Right. It's like, you want to be respectful. But we live in two different lifestyles. Right. And I'm like, grandma, we don't eat that. And I'm, again, we 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, having to tell your grandmother we don't eat that. And so she's like, y'all gonna eat them black eyed peas? Like, nah, grandma, we don't eat those. And so there's a lot of stuff that we just didn't eat. And so I'm thankful for the foundation. I'm thankful for the upbringing that my mother and father afforded me, because it's helped me to live a healthy lifestyle and understand the reasoning behind certain foods that we eat and we don't eat. Which reminds me, I know we haven't got to this, but even just thinking about my own students and going through the lunch line and seeing their experience. And you know, there's things in the lunch lines, like I look at some of the things that they get or serve, and the students are like, "Nah, Mr. Muhammad, we don't eat that, or we're not going to eat that." And I'm like, "Well, why not?" And they're like, "Mr. Muhammad, it's not halal." I said, "You're right, it's not halal." And for those who are listening and wondering, what does that word mean? What does halal mean? And it just means permissible. And for most students who are coming from other countries, we had a large influx of students who came from Afghanistan. When the whole crisis broke out, when troops left Afghanistan, a lot of Afghan students came here. They're like, "Mr. Muhammad, we're not eating that because it's not halal." I'm like, "Absolutely, I respect that." So that's just another experience that students have. And they're not talking about pork or beef. They're talking about chicken. We don't eat that. It's not halal. So, absolutely.
Yeah, that, you know, and I feel like that's the perfect segue into the next question that I have. And I think that you were kind of getting to this when you were speaking to that inclusion is being like, it's a trend right now. But I think that there was a point in time, and I know that there was a point in time in the early 2000s where there was a big event that happened in our country that kind of was extremely pivotal in our country's history. And even speaking to
Absolutely.
like the troops leaving Afghanistan, it kind of is like a full circle moment. And so I want to know specifically around like what were your thoughts around the 9/11 period? Like what A, as where were you? How was that experience? And like present day, like how do you feel like we've moved far further ahead in making some type of strides in inclusion?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. It's a great question. Where was I? So in 2001, I guess I'm telling my age, but I was 15 years old in high
Man,
school.
we know you old. Keep going. Keep playing with us. You the later end of millennials. Come on, just into it.
I was 15, and actually, I didn't go to school that day. I didn't go to school that day because it was my first day of getting my braces installed. And so now again, I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm headed to Children's Hospital, and we hear on the radio, a plane has just hit one of the Twin Towers. And I'm 15. I'm not thinking about Twin Towers. I don't care nothing about New York. I don't even know what that is. It means nothing to me. And so I'm like, okay, whatever. And this is the radio. And so we're going into to Children's Hospital, and then some way somehow they have on the loudspeakers that another plane has just hit the Twin Towers. I'm like, man, what in the world is going on? So we go upstairs. I'm at the orthodontist. I'm getting braces and whatnot, and I hear they got TVs on and radios on. I can't see anything. They all in my mouth, and so pause. And so then,
I was thinking it. That's a
then.
problem. Okay.
Then, yo, something's wrong with you.
What's wrong with me? You said it. But I'm the problem.
Oh man. So then I'm just listening to them talk about, yo, we may have to bring people who were injured to Children's Hospital, because they have to go to all these different trauma centers around the world because the plane had crashed in Virginia. And so I'm like, wow, man, this is crazy. And then, you know, they start digging deep and digging. Then, of course, by the time I get home, now this was in the morning, I get home maybe about 6 o'clock, and they start putting stuff on TV. Oh, you know, this Muslim day, or these people from this Muslim country and things like that. I'm like, wow. And so, you know, as time goes on, you know, they start to identify different people who may have been involved. And so from that, it's like, wow, you know, I'm wondering how are Muslims going to begin to be treated after this? And you know, I started to see my mom kind of uncover her hair just because she doesn't want to become a target for people who have ill feelings towards Muslims, similar to how when COVID first broke out, people started having ill feelings towards Asian people because they said, well, Asian people, you are the reason why we have COVID in this country. And so people started feeling like, well, Muslims, y'all the ones who attacked it. So we're going to attack y'all. And so these are, you know, people who are so-called patriots or people who want to defend the country. But in reality, most of the Muslims here are very peaceful. They are law-abiding citizens, contribute to society. And so it was a very fearful time, but I'm glad we survived it because, you know, it was a lot of hatred was going around towards Muslims. And at the end of the day, most Muslims, men are not, can't really be identified. It's mostly just women because of how they cover their hair. And so for me, I was just, you know, kind of worried and concerned about my mom and how, you know, things would happen with her. So it was a very fearful time. Just a lot of people at school had questions for me. I didn't go to school that day. So it's like, wait a minute. Our country gets attacked. You didn't come to school. Hey, I'm just telling you what I'm telling you how it went down. I was at Children's Hospital getting braces. But to the naked eye and the uninformed and the ignorant, they're like, well, you weren't in school. Your last name is Muhammad. Now you're back in school. And I can't even remember. I don't even know if school was even open the next day. But it was just a lot of talk about, you know, well, what's going on? And I didn't have to get into any physical or any verbal arguments. But, you know, there was the little sly jokes that was being thrown out there. And so, again, at 15, you're like, you know, what is this about? And so I'm glad I was able to overcome the challenges. And they didn't think I would make it, but God did.
This man.
What happened?
All right. Okay, DJ Khaled.
You know, I'm going to let him have it.
Of course you were. I'm not. I'm not. You know, I be watching. I like watching documentaries. I watch documentaries about any and everything. I just watched a documentary the other day about a female sumo wrestler. But that has nothing to do with this. I've watched documentaries and then a couple of shows about like just people from like the Muslim perspective. And also like reading and hearing how quick people's neighbors turned on them. Like they're invited to birthday parties that are coming up that weekend or the next week. And then they're no longer allowed to, their kids no longer allowed to come to the birthday parties.
Yeah.
And then also how it impacted, the assumptions impacted people who didn't identify as Muslim. I was, I think my brother was like, he had to be 4 or 5. We were like going on a flight to LA and his name is Savion. But he was on the terrorist list. So they had to go through some processing to get him off the list. And I'm like, you guys assume this because of his name. Because although in hindsight, they were right because he is an emotional terrorist. But that's not important right now. Wow. But anyways, at that time, it was just completely inappropriate. And I know, I feel like, Jahai, you have a similar experience.
Yeah, I have. So, yep, my name's Jahad. And so it was interesting. Because I remember a time in which we used to just like be able to walk straight up to the gate. Like there was no TSA at airports. Like I remember those times vividly. But post 9/11, I remember a different time of just being like hyper aware, having to be hyper aware of myself. I remember a time we were flying with my family and we were walking through TSA. We had just made it through and randomly they just started yelling like code some color, code blue. And they were like yelling for everybody to like stop moving. And it had just so happened after I had gone through the checkpoint. And so to me, it felt as if it was like, well, like, were y'all trying to see like what my reaction was going to be? And the reason why I'm saying that is because there was a time in which I couldn't even put my full name on like Facebook, like on just different social networks because it was post 9/11. There were just different things that social networks were hyper-vigilant about discrimination, essentially. And I don't think a lot of that gets discussed present day is, which is why I completely agree with Nasser, how he was naming the fact that we're a lot more inclusive today, present day. But I also was even thinking about like, the way that it happens for marginalized groups versus when folks in the majority are terrorists, domestic terrorists, and what we do when that happens, and how there isn't this air of let's be hyper vigilant towards these groups. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, well, I don't wonder why that is. I know exactly why that is. But I think it's a damn shame to be to live in 2023 and to see the things that we are seeing that white nationalists are doing and that they're getting away with. And the reason why I also call that out is because I think about Malcolm X. I think about Martin Luther King Jr. Like, I think about notable Black figures that were really paving the way for equitable society that genuinely looked out for Black and brown people and marginalized groups. And the reason as to why we aren't further along is because of assassinations and those types of things. And so I was appreciated what Nasser was saying, because I was thinking about like the whole element of inclusion, but I want to call out the fact that it's interesting how marginalized groups continue to be marginalized even when they're in the minority, but you have the majority white nationalist groups that don't get that same demonization.
Nothing. Because I'm tired of hearing about January 6th.
And I mean, I think you named it. I mean, white supremacy is the greatest threat to the United States of America. But I want to rewind, because you talked about from the 9/11, what else happened or what occurred. I mean, I talked about how the situation with my mom and how she kind of had to maneuver differently. But also, I mean, like you say, going to the airport, you know, you remember it. Well, you could do the curbside check-in. Mm-hmm. But when I give them my ID, you see my name. Hmm. Wait a minute, sir. You can't check-in out here.
Yep.
You got to go inside. Mm-hmm. Why can I check? Everybody else can check out here, but I can't. Mm-hmm. All right, okay, I see what this is about. Okay, well, now you got to go through the security. Sir, mm-hmm. we need to bring you over here for a random search. Mm-hmm. Random search. I get randomly searched every time I go to the airport. Mm-hmm. But again, this is the reality that I have to live through. So these are things that have happened. These are things that have occurred. And you just got to continue to overcome it.
Yeah.
So you're a dad. You have children, two beautiful children.
Yes.
Not a try to be. What is it like raising Muslim children in school present day?
It's tough. But the thing is, because I also went through something that they went through in regards to going to a public school that's not a majority Muslim school, mm-hmm. I'm able to have those conversations. So when my son comes home and says, or even like before that, when things come up, so we can start with Christmas. When I was little, never celebrated Christmas. You know, I would go to my grandma's house when I was little, and you know, she would get us gifts and whatnot. But after a certain age, we didn't get those. And then I would go home. My grandma had a Christmas tree. I would go home. There's no Christmas tree in my house. There are no lights. And so I would look outside and see people playing with toys and not really understand. Man, I wish I could celebrate Christmas. I wish I could get some toys. But that's not the lifestyle that I live. And so with my son, fast forward to my son, he's going through a similar thing. But I tell him, we don't celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Ramadan. We celebrate Eid. And at the end of Ramadan, that's when we get our toys. That's when we get our gifts. And so now he has something to look forward to, understand that, okay, some people celebrate Christmas. Some people celebrate other holidays. But me and my family, and my household, we celebrate Eid. We celebrate Ramadan. And so that's what he has to look forward to. And so on Christmas, you know, it doesn't have to be a thing of, man, I wish I could have some toys, or when am I going to get some toys? Or it's kind of similar to what I went through. And so, same thing when it comes to Valentine's Day. We don't celebrate Valentine's Day. We don't celebrate Easter. We don't celebrate these things. And so, but I constantly remind him and constantly tell him, other people at your school believe in different things and they celebrate different holidays. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not what we celebrate. And so he has a better understanding of, you know, what we celebrate and why we don't celebrate and who celebrates other different holidays. It wasn't something that was explicitly shared with me when I was growing up. And so it was like, I just had to just wonder and guess and figure it out on my own. But I mean, I think, like, you know, our generation of parents, they weren't into the explaining situation. It was do as I say. And that's it. Don't ask me no questions.
And put your hands in your pockets. Exactly. And don't come in here and start touching stuff.
Exactly. Don't ask me no questions. Do as I say. Seen, not heard.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Tom,
right.
Wasn't a such thing as a why.
And I honestly, didn't know that. And honestly, like, I mean, for me, I didn't really start having full on conversations with my mom, I would say, probably not until I was about 21 years old. Being able to question and ask and give reasons when I was in college. But today, my children, some people or the older parents or grandparents may see it as disrespect. Why is your son asking you why? Why is your son asking questions? He wants to know. He's inquisitive. And there's nothing wrong with explaining and giving reasoning behind, because that's how he starts to connect the ideas. That's how he starts to connect the concepts of why we don't celebrate things or why we do this. He used to always ask me, Daddy, are we going upstairs at this time because it's time to get in the bath? Versus if it was me and my mom said go upstairs, it was no why. It's just go upstairs and that's it. That's it. Go upstairs and wait until I tell you what to do next. Oh, man. But now with the explanation, that helps him to become more independent.
Yes.
That helps him to know, okay, it's time to go upstairs. I know it's time to get in the bath. I know it's time to get ready to go to bed. It's time for me to wind down. Mm-hmm. It's a quiet time because of where we are in the day. And so I think that helps him to become a critical thinker, because he starts to put two and two together as a Muslim young boy. But my daughter, she's not old enough. She's not old enough yet. She's only 2 years old. I know you be talking about children, how it is to raise Muslim children. But just my son, he's six. My daughter's two. So she's not there yet.
She's a little nugget. She's a funny one. I can't wait to see her when I get out there.
You ain't ready for her.
Turn up.
You're not ready for her.
Okay, so as we're bringing it to a close, what are maybe three things that you would like people who are listening to take from this episode?
Three things that I would like people to take from this episode. I would like people to take from this episode: one, check in with your Muslim students. See where they are mentally in regards to navigating the school system. Because it may be a situation about food, it may be situations about prayer, maybe situations about certain holidays. Because, for example, I mean, you know, you have Muslim students who may be in chorus or maybe in choral. Maybe they don't want to sing songs about Christmas. That's just maybe not what they want to do, because, hey, like, I don't celebrate Christmas and it's just not really for me. And so just check in with them about that. I would say the other piece is check in with your Muslim friends who are on the staff. See how they are when it comes to Ramadan, or see how they are when it comes to certain holiday parties. Are you okay coming? Are you okay with participating? I know you don't celebrate this holiday, but would you still participate? But then also on the flip side, hey, when is Ramadan? When is Eid? How can I participate? What is something that I can do to be in solidarity? Because oftentimes we just randomly are, hey, we doing Secret Santa. Everybody pick somebody. Oh, wait, man, I don't celebrate Christmas. I'm not buying Christmas gifts for nobody, for no reason. I don't care. And so I would say check in with Muslim students, Muslim friends and colleagues. And at the third piece, I want people to do some self-reflecting. Reflect on where you are in the school system, understanding that, hey, while it may be trendy or cool to be equitable, really try to understand what your Muslim friends and Muslim students are experiencing. Even if that means doing 10 days in solidarity of Ramadan, to really feel what it's like to go through that experience of no food, no water from sunup to sundown. And then you'll understand, okay, well, hey, this is serious. And you only doing 10 days, we doing 30.
Right.
We doing 30. And so just really try to lock in on that and just try to really tune in with people. I mean, if you are a true friend to them and you really care about them, try to understand what they're experiencing and try to have empathy and compassion for their experience in the school system, especially when they're the way they believe and way they practice life and their culture is different than the majority culture, because we live in a Judeo-Christian society, and where most times Islam is not accepted. A lot of people have Islamophobia, and so try to really dig deep and have do some self-reflection.
Those are beautiful.
I appreciate that.
Well, Nasser, thank you so much for being on yet another episode with us, because you kind of like a you like a resident guest. Yeah,
Respect
you're a resident
it.
guest. It's a lot for me to say, but you're a resident guest for real. So thank you so much,
Thank you for
and
having
we
me.
hope, yeah, and we hope everyone enjoyed the concept development.
And now we're moving into the call to action. And this is the time in which we love for you to not only think about what an amazing episode this was, but for you to take what we've taught you, the heart of the episode, and apply it to something by doing some type of action, and which is going to make the world a much better place. And as you were able to tell, this was another religion and spirituality episode, but I want to really hone in on the fact that there's been a lot of reflecting going on, and that may even be a portion of what this call to action is about. So, Lens, what else do we want to tell our lovely advocates?
Besides, go ahead and be a patron on Patreon.
That part.
We had an opportunity to talk to Nasser a little bit after, just to close things out with the concept development. And he has, I love when we get variety for our call to actions from our guests. And he has a very good one for those people that really like to be within a community to truly learn and understand and like to engage and interact with people. His suggestion is for you to go and visit your local mosque on a Friday, where they do the religious prayer of Jummah every Friday. And prayer is one of the five pillars of Islam. And so they'll pray and they congregate and enjoy this company. I think that this is an awesome idea. And just looking up where your local mosque is and then taking the steps to actually coordinate a visit, I think is really going to be a great cultural experience. I did a project, can't remember the project or the class, when I was at Howard, and my mom married a Muslim man when I was in elementary school. So I have more of an idea or a concept than like some people that I know, but I wanted to take a deeper dive. And so I interviewed one of my floor mates who was Muslim. And then I cannot remember where I went in DC, but I ended up going to like a Quran study course. So I had like downloaded the Quran digitally on, actually own one now, but I downloaded it digitally on my phone. And I made sure as a woman that I went and my hair was wrapped just because I want to ensure that I am showing respect to the people of the culture. But I learned a lot and just being in the space. So I would push people to make sure you're putting yourself physically in spaces and not just digitally to learn about these various groups, especially if you're an educator. Like it ain't gotta be something you do consistently, because like one time will change your perspective and allow you to move a little different when you understand other people's cultures. So that is the call to action for today. I hope that you enjoy this episode. I hope that you actually execute the call to action. And we will see you next time. Woo-hoo!
Peace, love, light.